用这个都杀不掉Thank you, friends. So first of all, I would like to welcome Bill's mother, Annie, and all of you for a while. Haven't seen you for a while. Thank you for joining us today. And this is our Tuesday night class. Every Tuesday we have a class, sitting meditations and learning some of the teachings of the Buddha to help ourselves to live joyfully, peacefully with ourselves and with the people that we love and with everybody around. So the Buddha teachings is for us is to live harmony with ourselves and harmony with others. This harmony is element is very important. If you don't live harmony with yourself and others, I mean, there's something wrong in our way of life. So when you it doesn't matter, we have to live harmony with ourselves, with the environment around us, even we encounter with different people, you know, because in this world we have so many differences in religions, in the world, the society. But the important is, how do we live harmony with ourselves? So the teachings of the Buddha is not to go against anybody or any religion, because the teaching of the Buddha is show us the way to untie the knot of unharmony in ourselves. So when we have harmony in ourselves, we're able to embrace everything around us. We have harmony in our body, harmony in our mind, and harmony in our way of speaking and our way of acting, in the way that we work with other people. And then when you have that element in you, then I think it's you go live, you have a lot of friends wherever you go, even animals, you know. If you have harmony in you, the animal can feel that too, because that energy is radiate not only in you but everything's everywhere you go. That's why in Buddhism we have never have any kind of war, even holy war. Not that the teaching is to be togetherness and living together in a peaceful, in a harmony way. So today start out, I would like to this is a short, very discourse. They have both language, Vietnamese and English, and they call spiritual diet. So every day we eat food, and food is just on edible food, it's just only one kind of food. So spiritual also need food. So so this book is very, it's kind of, sometimes it's just less than one page, and it's very have a very good story that can motivate you in your everyday life, and to live a peaceful and a harmony with yourself and others. So the story I would like to share with you today is they call the fence around the house. So I would like to let Gretchen read it to you. Her accent is much better than mine.
Very English.
Read the title and then.
Okay. The Fence. There was a little boy with a bad temper. His father gave him a bag of nails and told him that every time he lost his temper, to hammer a nail in the back fence. The first day, the boy had driven 37 nails into the fence. Then it gradually dwindled down. He discovered it was easier to hold his temper than to drive those nails into the fence. Finally, the day came when the boy didn't lose his temper at all. He told his father about it, and the father suggested that the boy now pulled out one nail for each day that he was able to hold his temper. The days passed, and the young boy was finally able to tell his father that all the nails were gone. The father took his son by the hand and led him to the fence. He said, "You have done well, my son, but look at the holes in the fence. The fence will never be the same. When you say things in anger, they leave a scar just like this one. You can put a knife in a man and draw it out. Won't matter how many times you say I'm sorry. The wound is still there."
So that's a little story about the man and his boy son, and the way that he teaches his son is to do something instead of, you know, when the boy get angry or anything, he just, you know, just go ahead, and when you're angry, you just nail one nail on the fence. And the boy discovered that, oh, it's hard to climb up, he's too short, right? So to nail the nails on the fence, so he said, oh, I better, you know, manage my anger then. Then nail the nails on the fence, right? And then when he all mastered that, he said, oh, then what? Then the father tells him to put out each day when you're able to manage his anger, right? To put out one time that you're able to manage your anger. And you pull out one nail, and then that day he didn't have no anger, right? Mm-hmm. So he said, oh, I'm successful in managing my anger. And then father didn't say anything, just hold his hand and go to the fence and say, what we have done, you done good, but you see what kind of imprint you have to leave on the fence, and that what we have done a lot in our life, right? We have to say things out of anger, and so we say sorry many times, and many times we have been say sorry, but every time we say sorry, there is imprints. We leave a mark on the consciousness of the person who we have caused that. So anger is the seed, is the root in us. Imagine that if we don't have angry seeds in us, then we will be never angry. You see, why we're angry? Because we have the roots of anger, right? If we have transferred completely our anger, and then we will never, whoever, whatever, say something to us, we will never end, because we don't have the seeds of anger, right? So the root is in us. Mm-hmm. See, you have the root of anger in us. So that way we are very easy to be angry, whatever condition that provoke us, right? Very easy. So imagine that one day you completely transfer all the seeds of anger in yourself, and you'll be the happiest person. That's the happiest person in the world. Doesn't matter if you are the poorest person, but you're still the happiest because you're never angry. Angry, that's what causes so much of suffering and so much of unhappiness, right? Just like the Buddha. Even he became a Buddha already, and he had many people was talking at him. Many religious leaders at the time because of jealousies. And even they murdered the, you know, one young woman and buried by his hurt, his hermitage. And accused him of, you know, raping the girl and killed the girl, and he never say anything. He said, "You will see." He know. He said, he told his disciple, "You will just go out and beg. And begging, go begging, you know, alms. If people say anything, don't react. And sooner or later, you will find out, people will find out who done it." Mm-hmm. Imagine it was us, you know, if someone was accused us of, you know, murder someone. We have to take a lawyer. We have to call a sign.
Right.
But the Buddha was very calm and very patient and very loving because he didn't have the seeds of anger in him. You see, imagine. And even when there is people who was other religion was jealous of him, and they tell the member go to and pretend she was pregnant, and they say that he was having sex with the Buddha and pregnant, and in the front of thousand of members, and stand up and say that you make me pregnant, and the Buddha didn't anger, you know, just sit, you know, in calmness and meditation. And when the lady was see the Buddha was coming, and she was so afraid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Buddha reacted just with, he just sit in meditation and he sent out his love and kindness to every sentient being in this world. Doesn't matter the devil, the demons, the evil one, or the love and kind one. He just sent out the love and energies to everyone. And this girl so happy because she, inside of her, she is not very calm. So she afraid when he sees the calmness of the Buddha, and she run. And she run and accidentally she hit some bomb, and then you know the rope got cut, and the things inside to be pendant fall out. Yeah. And bring everything into light. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is that if we don't have the seeds of anger, we don't react, and things will become clarity. Things will become itself, bring itself into light. But if we react, then it becomes more, you know, chaotic and confusing, right? But that's what happened to us. Every time something happened to us, we stir ourselves up emotionally, and we complicate the situation. So that's a spiritual story for you. So this is the next story is this is a loving story, very short, maybe less than half a page. You read.
Teaching with heart. Many pupils were studying meditation under the Zen master Singai. One of them used to arise at night, climb over the temple wall, and go to town on a pleasure jaunt. Singai, inspecting the dormitory quarters, found his pupil missing one night and also discovered the high stool he used to scale the wall. Singai removed the stool and stood there in its place. When the wanderer returned, not knowing that Singai was the stool, he put his feet on the master's head and jumped down onto the grounds. Discovering what he had done, he was aghast. Singai said, It is very chilly in the early morning. Do be careful not to catch cold yourself. The pupil never went out again at night.
So this is another story that, you know, sometimes the master tried to teach his student, but he never used anything. He just used love without saying anything. Imagine if someone to step on your head, you know, to climb down, and you will be very angry, right? But this teacher, Yen teacher, is very skillful in his teaching. You know that his student is not very good at the practice. That they still have many desire, many things, many wantings. To want to go out to discover the world, right? So the student went out at night, sneak out. Zen training is very strict. So Zen training is very strict. If you see Dōchen mm-hmm. movie, you see that very strict training and a lot of sitting. And sometimes you are over practiced and you want to relax a little bit, you know, student want to relax a little bit, went out and sneak out at night. and try to investigate what is out there, you know, instead of investigate themselves in the monasteries. So every night, you know, to monitor the teacher who will check out the student. Every night, they walk around and see how each dormitory, each room, you know, doing. But actually, he's a headmaster. He go around and see how his student practice or, you know, living together. So he discovered this one room is empty. Room is empty. And he look around and he say, "Oh, the stool by the fence, you know, by the wall." So this one of the student might use this stool to climb out, you know, the wall. So he didn't say anything. He, instead of angry, you know, going to, you know, in front of everybody and say his student is that or that, he didn't say anything. He just removed the stool and stand there by the fence and wait patiently, waiting for this student to come back. And he come back and he just, you know, climb back and thought, you know, his master as his stool. And step, you know, on the head to climb down. But instead of angry, he didn't say anything. He say, he used his love. He say, "Be careful! It's cold out there, or it's hot out there. It's very hot out there. Hot here is where a lot of temptation out there." What he meant is that very chilly out there. Be careful! You will get caught. Mm-hmm. You get trapped. You know, he don't mean that you are. It's cold out there. He says it's chilly out there in the morning. That means there's a lot of temptations, a lot of craving out there. And be careful, don't get caught. Mm-hmm. At first, he already got caught in his mind. That's why he wants to go out there and enjoy that. But instead of use his authorities to kick out, you know, in the monastery, it's very strict. If you do that, you will kick out. Because if it's not, it will be chaotic. Because when I was in the monastery, we have about 200 practitioners, monks. And one time, the novice we got into a fight somehow, and they got kicked out. They have to kick out the monasteries because it's used as a mirror for other people. Because if we don't very strict, you know, everybody become chaotic. But this Sen guy was very loving, very kindness to use skillful in teachings and to teach his student. And from there, that student never go out again, you know. And that means love and kindness can transform the situation. Love and kindness, his love and kindness can transform the desire, the temptation of his students, of his instead of using strict discipline, but he used love and kindness. So this is all. Now this is the question is posed to you. So student is like your children. You know, if you have a children, and your children is very undisciplined, right? And let's go out at middle of the night, and some children is like that. They sneak out. They just see that their parents sleep, and they just open the window and sneak out at night. And get some drink, go to bar, club, and use a window to come back at night, right? I imagine that if you have one of your children is like that, how are you going to discipline your children? If you are a teacher, you like you have, and the student is like your children. So you all, most of you here have children. So it's the lesson for you, yeah. How to teach you, you know, train to discipline your children with love and kindness, right? Instead of you might get angry, you might yell at them, you might scold at them, you might do many angry things at them, and most parents do that. They love the children, but that their way of expression, how they love them, right? How they love the children, how to discipline the children. And something that you do very gentle, very caring, then it imprints something very deep. And that is the lesson that we learn and we never forget. Just one gentle care. One gentle love, and you will never do it again, and the children will never do it again, same thing. But if you use a lot of aggressive behavior to children, they not appreciate, in their heart they not appreciate, but instead of they may suddenly they will be angry at you too, right? But if you use skillful of love and kindness, and it's a healing, and it's transforming the habit energy, you see. So it's a lot, that's a little treat for you for the beginning to study. So, so today we will talk a little bit on some questions that some of our classmates have posed to me and asked me to have some clarifications on the on the subjects of non-self. Or non-self, or the opposite of non-self is what? Self, right? Or ego. And the teachings of non-self is it can be a threat, it can be very frightening to many people, because normally in our vernacular life we live with a self. And with ourself, we cannot survive. It's hard. And with our non-self, you cannot survive either. I can have a chair here. Can you sit on a chair? And you know, and this topic or subject of self and non-self, Thầy Pháp Ân have discussed with us. You know, the retreat, during the retreat, you remember? And he went over with the story of the King Milinda and monastics and a monk named Nagasena, right? And both the king have asked the Venerable Nagasena about the self and non-self, and they go back and forth. And in that, teaching is it's go a lot of analysis there, but sometimes it's hard to get a grip of that, a glimpse of self and non-self. If you get some glimpse in if you really taste some glimpse of self and non-self, you must be happy. You must light in your everyday life. And sometimes we talk, we listen to the sharing, but it's more like sharing, but it's not actual experience, actual taste, the teaching of non-self yet. If you really get some glimpse of non-self, your life must light. Just only glimpse, not say that totally, completely taste the teaching of non-self. So we will have you to read this story again, just one, the question number one, and then we will discuss on that. I would like to have you engage into that so that we can clarify, because I don't want to lecture or preach, but just to would like to hear your understanding. So once you get stuck, then we discuss more, and then it's become clear. Because you get engaged, then it's much active and much life. So can you read from here to peace to see? Can you read the first page? Read aloud so that everybody can hear it.
Okay. Chapter 1. Now Milinda the king went up to where the venerable Nagasena was and addressed him with the greetings and compliments of friendship and courtesy, and took his seat respectfully apart. And Nagasena reciprocated his courtesy so that the heart of the king was propitiated. And Milinda began asking, "How is your reverence known, and what, sir, is your name?" "I am known as Nagasena, O king, and it is by that name that my brethren in the faith address me. But although parents, O king, give such a name as Nagasena, or Surasena, or Virasena, or Sihasena, yet this sire, Nagasena, and so on, is only a generally understood term, and a designation in common use. For there is no permanent individuality, no soul, involved in the matter." Then Milinda called upon the Yonakas, and the brethren to witness the Nagasena says there is no permanent individuality, no soul, implied in his name. Is it now even possible to approve him in that? And turning to Nagasena, he said, "If, most reverend Nagasena, there be no permanent individuality, no soul, involved in the matter, who is it, pray, who gives to you members of the order, or your robes and food, and lodging and necessaries for the sick? Who is it who enjoys such things when given? Who is it who lives a life of righteousness? Who is it who devotes himself to meditation? Who is it who attains to the goal of the excellent way, to the nirvana, or of arahatship?
Arahatship.
And who is it who destroys living creatures? Who is it who takes what is not his own? Who is it who lives an evil life of worldly lusts, who speaks lies, who drinks strong drink, who, in a word, commits any one of the five sins, which work out their bitter fruit even in this life? If that be so, there is neither merit nor demerit. There is neither doer nor causer of good or evil deeds. There is neither fruit nor result of good or evil karma. Of most reverend Nagasena, we are to think that we are man. To kill you there would be no murder. Then it follows that there are no real masters or teachers in your order, and that your ordinations are void. You tell me that your brethren in the order are in the habit of addressing you as Nagasena. Now what is that, Nagasena? Do you mean to say that the hair is Nagasena? I do not say that, great king. or the hairs on the body perhaps? Certainly not.
Yeah, you can pass on to Sian and read the next page.
Or is it the nails, the teeth, the skin, the flesh, the nerves, the bone, the marrow, the kidneys, the heart, the liver, the abdomen, the spleen, the lungs, the larger intestines, the lower intestines, the stomach, the feces, the bile, the phlegm, the pus, the blood, the sweat, the fat, the tears, the serum, the saliva, the mucus, the oil that lubricates the joints, the urine, or the brain, or any or all of these? That is Nagasena. And to each of these, he answered, no. It is the outward form, that rupa, then rupa, that is Nagasena, or the sensations, vadina, that, or the ideas, or the confections, the constituent elements of character, or the consciousness, that is Nagasena. And to each of these, he answered, no. Then is it all these skandhas combined that are Nagasena? No, great king. But is there anything outside the five skandhas that is Nagasena? And still he answered, no. Then thus, ask as I may, I can discover no Nagasena. Nagasena is mere empty sound. Who, then, is the Nagasena that we see before us? It is a falsehood that your reverence has spoken an untruth. And the venerable Nagasena said to Melinda the king, you, sire, have been brought up in a great luxury, as beseems your noble birth. If you were to walk this dry weather on the hot and sandy ground, trampling underfoot the gritty, graveling grains of hard sand, your feet would hurt you, and as your body would be in pain, your mind would be disturbed, and you would experience a sense of bodily suffering. How then did you come, on foot, or in a chariot? I did not come, sir, on foot. I came in a carriage. Then, if you came, sire, in a carriage, explain to me what that is. Is it the pole that is the chariot? I did not say that. Or is it the axle that is the chariot? Certainly not. It is the wheels, or the framework, or the ropes, or the yoke, or the spokes of the wheels, or the goad, that are the chariot? And to all these he still answered no. Then is it all of these parts that are the chariot?
No, sir. But is there anything outside them that is the chariot? And still he answered no. Then thus ask as I may, I can discover no chariot. Chariot is a mere empty sound. What then is the chariot you say you came in? Is it a falsehood that your majesty has spoken, an untruth? There is no such thing as a chariot. You are king all over India, a mighty monarch. Of whom, then, are you afraid that you speak untruth? And he called upon the Yanakas and the brethren to witness, saying, Melinda the king here has said that he came by carriage. But when asked in that case to explain what the carriage was, he is unable to establish what he averred. Is it forsooth possible to approve him in that? When he had thus spoken, the 500 Yanakas shouted their applause and said to the king, now let your majesty get out of that if you can. And Melinda the king replied to Nagasena and said, I have spoken no untruths, reverend sir. It is on account of its having all these things, the pole and the axle, the wheels and the framework, the ropes, the yoke, the spokes, and the goad, that it comes under the generally understood term, the designation in common use of chariot. Very good. Your majesty has rightly grasped the meaning of chariot. And even so, it is on account of all those things you question me about. The 32 kinds of organic matter in a human body, and the 5 constitute elements of being, that I come under the generally understood term, the designation in common use of Nagasena. For it was said, sire, by our sister Vagriya, in the presence of the Blessed One, just as it is by the condition precedent of its coexistence of various parts that the word chariot is used, just so is it that when the skandhas are there, we talk of a being. Most wonderful Nagasena and most strange. Well has the puzzle put to you, most difficult though it was, been solved. Were the Buddha himself here, he would approve your answer. Well done, Nagasena.
Yeah. Thank you. So that is the first questions were conversations between the kings, Melinda and Nagasena. about the individual self and the soul. And it's kind of hard to get some grips, huh? So once you have listened to Thich Nhat Hanh's talk, and now we reread it again and see, because every time we reread it again, we will see something different. If you have practice and you have some practice here, you have contemplate some of these elements in your everyday life, and what you call a self, and. And there's a word that skanda, and skanda is the five skanda is the Sanskrit term, which is composed of form, sattva, feeling, perceptions, the mental formation, and consciousness. It's the five skanda that compose that make up of this body, according to the Buddha's teachings. Okay, so what do you think of the questions, you know, of the individual self and the no self, no individual soul? And the king said, if there is no individual soul, who will take the responsibility of all these acts? It's the question posed to us, and sometimes it obsesses us too. And you say, if no self, then who is responsible for this? That's the question. And that's Honda too, you know. And the Buddha say, in the teaching of the Buddha, is one of the basic teaching is non-self. We to a three Dharma seal, impermanent, non-self, nirvana. It's three mark, three seals of the teaching of the Buddha. Every teaching of the Buddha have to testify by that three self, impermanence, non-self, and bliss or nirvana, happiness, freedom. Have to testify in that light of the teachings of three Dharma seals. And for us, and when we say non-self, and it can be frightening, you know, we have done so many things in this life. We have created many acts, many deeds in this life. And he said that there is nobody to responsible for these acts or this deed. And it's become frightening. If no self, we will not work. You work for who? Who will enjoy the benefit, right? That is the question. Why you work? Because you feel that you later, after you retire, you go enjoy what you work. But the Buddha, he understand omniscience, totally understand the teaching of omniscience, but he worked endlessly until the last moment of his life. You know, when he was about to pass away in Nirvana, there is one monk, 80 years, no, one lay, who was very 80 years old, come and ask him for ordain. He still ordained for that, to become a student, to become, to receive the teaching. So he actively worked for sentient beings, for the benefit of all sentient beings for his whole life. But he still, he drowned in non-self. His umbrella is more bigger. When we drown in ourselves, we are very small. Very small self. So in according to your understand, so this is your time to engage. And each of you have to pose a question. Have to work. And tell us your understand and of the non-self. Non-self here is not a separate existence. you exist not separate from this universe. That's what I mean. You are interdependent, interconnected with the thing around you. That's what I mean. You are much bigger than your little self. Lisa?
The first retreat I went to, I was really touched by the touching of the earth exercise, ritual, and that to me was helped me kind of get a sense of it, at least intellectually, of what non-self was, because we touched the earth for our, you know, our ancestors, our blood ancestors, our land ancestors, our spiritual ancestors. And I realized, or I felt like I got a sense of how I'm not alone. Like that when I come to a challenge, when I come to something that's difficult, I bring all my ancestors with me. If it's the wisdom of the people who lived on this land before I did, or the teachings that I've gotten from Buddhism or Christianity or Judaism, that all comes with me. And so I'm not, it was an interesting experience, because I just felt less alone. It wasn't just me against the world, we were all sort of working together, and I came with all that knowledge and wisdom behind me. So that was one experience that helped.
Thank you, Lisa.
I think for me lately, because things keep changing, there's this knowing that I don't exist here independently of anything, that everything I eat is part of me, and everything that went into what I eat is part of me, and the Sangha is part of me, and I'm in reverse, I'm part of that, of the Sangha and the food and the sky, and so when I do something, when I act, all these things are also acting, behaving, and so I can't do it all the time, but I feel this need to act in a way that is in harmony with everything that's part of me, which is not limited. And so I guess that's how, part of how I would answer who takes responsibility of act. I don't know if that makes sense.
Anyone else? If you have some confusions or some you would like to make us clarify, you can post throw it on the table. Add out so that if it's not, you are not the only one that might be confusing about this topic or not, you know.
I can just add one more thing, just that something a little more simpler is when you, if you notice when you've been hanging out with somebody for a while, and you start hearing like their tone of voice in your voice, or some of you start noticing their behaviors in your behavior, or if you start seeing your parents and yourself, you know, as you get older in your behavior and your speech and all that stuff, that may be the most obvious. That to me is like, there it is right there. We are made of constituent parts. And I like what you said, Gretchen, about how we carry all that with us. That's all acting, we're acting in concert with that. I like that idea.
So think about, you know, who, if we don't have no self, who will be responsible? That's the question that's haunting us, you know. And contemplate that a little bit and see yourself. Where is your understand all that, you know. If you do good act, it's okay, but what example, if you do something, if someone commit murder or something like that, and if there is no self, who is responsible for that? And who will get punished? So when you study about non-self, you have to be active, engaging in like asking questions, contemplating, and see, and clarifying, testifying your understanding through. Testifying here is not only theory, but through your practice, through your personal experience of non-self and everyday daily life that you take, you do the work.
About this, and I don't know if this is like a right perception of this, but so as you do actions, and every action you do really affects everything around you or people around you, things around you and activities. So your actions affect others. Yet your consciousness, maybe, I'm wondering, is kind of more individual. So individually you have a consciousness that you're thinking about, okay, I have to do this particular action. And then you think about, how is this action going to affect other people negatively or positively? So is the consciousness really more kind of like separate, and that's what carries through you to different maybe lifetimes or you know, do you know what I mean? I'm just wondering about, yeah, is the consciousness what carries through, yet your actions is what affects everything, you know, in this worldly world.
Thank you for your questions. Nicole?
Yeah. It seems to me it's sort of like a paradox. Because I take responsibility now for my actions as much as possible. But at the same time, I see how interdependent all of us really are. Maybe somebody over there commits a murder, or they steal, that's an easier one. Say they're hungry and they steal. And I didn't help to give anybody any food. So the responsibility is shared because of the network, the interconnectedness of us all. But for me, trying to be mindful of my behaviors and my experiences, maybe that's a way to contribute into that network. Even though there's a self and a non-self, maybe it's like the analogy of the drop of water in the ocean. I'm a drop of water, but I'm in the ocean too at the same time.
Yeah, without a drop of water, there is no ocean.
Yeah.
Without many drops of water.
Yeah, without many drops of water. Thank you, Nicole. So, Barbara, right?
Yes.
You have something to say?
Well, I feel that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience.
Mm-hmm.
And in that, relating spiritually to each other,
mm-hmm.
we know each other much deeper than the bodies that we are, if we will open ourselves to understanding other people. So I think we talk about who's responsible if there's no self. The self would be the what we think we are, the who we think we are.
Mm.
The no self would be the spiritual part of us that's interconnected to all of us and to everything around us.
Mm.
And so I feel the more I'm connected to my spiritual side, my spirituality, and my feelings towards each other, accepting others where they are, and allowing them to be where they are without judging, is allowing the responsibility to be shared, perhaps.
Yeah, thank you, Barbara. Anyone else want to share? So I would like to share with the consciousness questions. So in each of us, we have what we call individual consciousness. Just like we have a small family. Right? It's from individual and then go to family. And go to a small communities, and go to nations, and go to international. So there is individual consciousness, and we also in Buddhism we call another. We also have collective consciousness. Collective consciousness as a society. But without individual consciousness, there is no. Collective consciousness. So without individual, there is no family, and without family, there is no village or no community, right? And without different sub village or districts, there is no state. There is no state. There is no nations. So we can see how it's connected from individual consciousness to the collective consciousness. But if we individual, we research, we take care of our individual consciousness, then we'll take care. Then each individual take care of the individual consciousness, then the collective consciousness will be take care. So the same here is a non-self here. Because you know that self is a collection. Or a combination of physical and mental constructions. Then we call self. Or we call ego. In collections of habitual patterns. And these collections of habitual patterns form into a self. And you look just like the conversations between King Melinda and Reverend Nagasena. It's like that. And they ask each other, you know, whether the hair or the body or the feet or the liver is self. And it's not. Individual is not, right? But when all this put together, we call self. And when it, but when it's taken apart, then how are you going to identify that as a self? You see, it's like that. So its collection as a self is a collection of our good habitual, even the good or bad habituals form a self. Yeah, the collections, physical acts and mental act. It's a construction together, constructive. And if we focus a lot more on self, then self always constantly in a restlessness state. If you practice, you can see how restless we are. We constantly have a lot of energy of restlessness in ourselves. If you are contemplating you by yourself, you can see that. But if you're in a group or you're in a party, you don't see that because you've been occupied by the external. And you're occupied by external and busy by external, you don't see yourself. You don't see your experience, your restless energy is day and night, it's running. And this stress energy, you carry the kind of worries, anxiety, fear. It's all latent, hidden in you. In us, wrong perceptions. Self always wrong perception. Because it's trying to protect itself. It's always like that. And it's always a feeling of insecure. The self. And the self always fight to possess. Because they feel insecure. Self feel insecure. And that you can see that through many relationships, we try to possess. First you try to possess, you fight with someone else on the world. For example, you go out, you look for a lover. Right? And you fight. Physically and mentally, you fight to possess that person. Right? And once you possess, you're still not satisfied. The self is not you, but the self is not satisfied yet. If that person is not at in accordance to what you like or what you wish, then come to trouble. And sometimes we couldn't rest ourselves. This is how. And this needs some practice, needs some calmness to see this kind of energy in you. And mostly we fail to look closely at the self. And the self, this guy in many forms, this guy self under many forms. So self always chases after many things. We chase after our properties, about many things that we chase after, but we don't know. We've been carried by this self. And so this self is not satisfied. Ego become evil. You see the word ego here. Ego or self, right? And that is leading to evil. If the self is not a satisfied self, unsatisfied its need. And we have the root of this in us. All of us, not more or less, we have this root of ego. But some things, sometimes we act it out, but sometimes it's hidden. When there is sufficient condition, then it's manifest through many things. For example, anger is one form of ego. And then once the self is not satisfied, and then it's turned into rejection or deny. And this is our, today is our society, this kind of illness, rejections. And once we deny and then we get a put, and then it's coming to projection, you project that out to the world. And we don't know it. And then when sometimes we do some evil act, and if the nun say, and then he say, who you are responsible? That's the question. If there is no self, there is none self. Who will enjoy his pleasure if you do something good? Right? But we can enjoy it as a nation. You don't have to be, for example, if you think that if Obama did make a decision that something that going to war, he's responsible for himself, or the whole nation, every one of us responsible. You see how interdependent we are. Even when you do, you commit some evil act. It's a collective of society and individual. Because you've been influenced by your parents, right? Isn't that? You influenced by your friends. You influenced by your siblings. You are not alone. But when you look at very narrow, you see that you are the alone of responsible of whatever happened. But you look it broadly, globally, you can see that how interdependent we are as something that bitterness, something that is joyful. If Obama make a good decisions, then the whole nation will be benefit, right? But if Obama make a bad decisions, the whole nation will bear suffering. So not one person responsible for the acts. If we look globally. Because we are somehow relate to each other in different aspects of our life. So when you look at globally, you can see that, and you can open up the answers of who responsible, who taking of the result of the actions. Then you say that, oh, not only the self responsible, but for the collective self. You be responsible. Lisa?
Oh, can you maybe speak to, I've seen in regards to the oil spill,
mm-hmm.
People who want to blame BP or blame mm-hmm. the government, and then others who have posted on Facebook that we're, any of us who use oil are responsible.
Yes.
And so when you talk about, like, how we then sort of process that and mm-hmm. consider what our role is and what our,
mm-hmm.
how we help
yep.
bring it into that.
So you see that now is the problem is oil spill, and if we don't practice, we will take blame for BP. But if look back, if nobody used oil, nobody used gas, then BP will not go to drill. We will not drill the oil in the deep ocean, right? On the surface, they are making benefits. It's true. But if nobody spend, nobody use gas or oil, then BP will not use the well, the oil well. So here we have to act collectively, not to blame or not to condemn BP, but to have a collective decisions. Our government have to sit down and what is the best method that we can save our environment. Blame will not go anywhere, you know. If we continue to blame BP for their mistakes, and they become more confusions, more chaotic in their thinking, and they don't find a way out to solve the oil spill problems. So as acting as a non-self here is to come together as those people who have the skill to work together to find the solution for oil spill and find better to clean up the pollution. That's the better way to deal with it. But if everybody continue to blame, to condemn, conviction, then it will not. It's getting worse. Mm-hmm. It's getting worse. So if we act together as a non-self, as a big umbrella, then we will find a solution and work together, and we will learn what to make to prevent from the future mistakes from drilling oil, and to more exploring our sea. That is the calling. Something happened is the calling of the Mother Nature. You know that. So it's happened for some purpose, but we don't, our naked eye, we cannot see. Maybe a cry of the mother. Last the speech, I give a speech at Mother's Day, I say that the mother is crying. Is the cry of the mother, is the calling for us to sit down. She's been hurt so much, but we never know. We exploit our Mother Earth so much. We take so much granted from our Mother Earth, and we use it very unmindful, and we pollute it, the Mother Earth. So its only way is to her is to cry out for us so that we can listen to her. She's been imprisoned us so much. We have so much, we have done so much damage to our this Mother Earth because of our way of living, our way of spending. We waste so much that it's not necessary to be waste. We are so small self. So that's the self acting and damaging. If we look at the non-self and we see how we are connecting, how much we are interrelated to this Mother Earth, And that is the teaching of the non-self. And you see, we can see that how now we are getting close. Every day more scientific things coming out. We are globalizing our communications, our technology. You see, we're getting, we see how much we are interrelated with other nations in this world, to the third world countries, to many, many countries. And that is the non-self teachings. You see how much, the more globalized we are, the more we are close and getting close to the non-self of the teaching of the Buddha. And we have to act mindfully, carefully. We have to act with love, with care. That's the only method to save our Mother Earth. To live the simple life, you know, instead of wasting so many unnecessary ways, spending so many unnecessary spend. So the teaching of the non-self is very effective. And we need to realize our teachings so that we try to protect our Mother Earth. If we realize the teachings, apply the teaching of non-self in our everyday life, just part of it, not the whole thing, we already save this Earth a lot. If we are taking responsible for ourselves, the teaching of non-self here is not to abandon, to tell you to be neglect of your own responsibility of yourself. And here is the teaching of non-self is to take care of yourself. Take care of your thinking. Take care of your feelings. Because you know that you are interdependent with other people's feelings. If you have a devil feelings, you know how much it's going to affect your family, affect your children, affect your friends. So the self always crawl itself like this, you know, make it small like this, and crawl itself, and make it suffocate itself. The more we withdraw to our own self, we suffocate ourselves. But the more we open up and we connect, the more freedom, the more bigger you are. Just like that. Teaching of non-self is always go along with the teachings of impermanence. Self is permanent, but non-self is impermanent. Because self is always trying to... So impermanent is time, but non-self is space. Look at that. Time and space. Because life is always a flow, right? Constantly flow. The self is always to hold on, hold back. You see? Self is trying to hold on something, to hold on. Never to change, ever change. But life always a flow, always a constant change. Now you sit here, your breath constantly changing every part of, in every second. Your body is changing, either grow younger and the process younger and then process grow older constantly, but we never deeply see that. So non-self is letting go. Not chasing. Stop chasing. Letting go in an active way, that means you constantly live in the awareness stage so that you can clearly see the flow of change in you and surround you. So active here, letting go here, is completely with no deny, no resistance. With no deny. We are very much deny our existence. letting go here, you are continuously transformed. Change here is transformed. You either transform into, you can transform in the positive way or transform in a negative way. Some people are very good and they turn into very bad. Not bad because the environment that they was around is not good for them. So the environment influenced them. For example, some children are very, very beautiful children, and somehow they go to school, somehow they met some friend on the street and they influence that. Because they don't have the mature understand and mature view of life yet. So they are very fragile, just like a flower under the sun in the morning. It can be fading at any time. They don't have a life experience yet. But if you are a mature on all lessons, you should go, you change some mature all lessons, they change from good to bad, some from bad to good, because of the condition that surround them. But here's the mean that they are right or wrong because of the condition around them. So you don't say that you are wrong because of this, or you have to go look beyond right and wrong, but see what the condition fit for them. So if you go beyond that, you can open your mind and see. And you are free of judgment. You not judge anyone, but you know, because you are in a constant awareness, constant of understand, constant awareness of seeing the natures of that person. So when we study the non-self, I think it's the best teaching is the teaching of interdependent co-arisings. The best teaching is you look into that teaching for the non-self, because everything arises is interdependent co-arisings. That's the best teaching for the non-self, in according to my understanding. Maybe some teacher might be saying something different, but because we are interdependent, interconnectedness. So when we go beyond right and wrong, and we accept everything as it arises, but in a constant awareness, that's the difference. That's the difference. You see, but not the judgments. I can see you, everybody, you can see about it, but your mental is calm. And you don't have to label this person or this person like that. You can see them clearly who they are. But you don't have to label them as this or that. All label is just like name. It's like, you know, hair, eye, ears, no. Just a name. So that you can designate it. You don't get stuck into that, you know. If I ordain, I don't have the name Tin Man, right? My mother has given me a different name. But when I into the order of monastics, my teacher gave me a name Tin Man. And from there, I identify myself with Tin Man. And if somebody talk bad about Tin Man, I got upset. That is the self. But if somebody was talk bad about Tin Man, I just calm and smile, breathe. That is another self. That's the difference. Lisa?
I saw an interview with a man named Wes Moore. Have people heard about the book that's newly out called The Other Wes Moore? And this is a young man who's a Rhodes Scholar and grew up in the same neighborhood as another young man named Wes Moore. And he read about him later on, and who was in prison for murder. And he looked at both of their histories, and he talks about and looks at how similar both histories were, and how easily he could have been the other Wes Moore, and the other Wes Moore could have been him.
Mm-hmm.
So that might be an interesting one to look at to see kind of.
Wes Moore?
Yeah, the other Wes Moore.
Mm, the other Wes Moore. So when you get a glimpse of non-self, you become very gentle and very caring and relaxed. You care but you relax. You're gentle but you relax. In your way of looking, in your way of acting, in your way of living. Just like a mother, you know, who understand her children, then she become caring, become gentle with her children. So you walk in this life very light. You know, if once you understand life, you embrace life, and you walk with life, you flow. You accept the change, you know. We constantly change. We live through constantly change, but we accept the change. And many, many people are very, when change happens, it's very hard for them to accept. You know, very hard for them to accept. For example, impermanence in your life, you know. We all experience some kind of tragedy in our life, some kind of tragedy, some small tragedy, some middle tragedy, some huge tragedy in our life. But some survive, some of us survive, but some of us cannot. That tragedy draws us because we couldn't accept the tragedy and move on. So, for example, how could you deal with your lovely spouse that passed away, or someone that you love dearly? It's like one kind of tragedy, you know. And we try to hold on to that a lot, and we don't see that that person is being transformed, himself or herself, into a different form. So it's hard for us to accept the loss in our life. We have been lost. You sit down, you sit here, and you imagine yourself how much you have been lost. Some of you lost your job. Some of you lost your friends. Some of you lost your grandparents. Some of you lost your mom, lost your dad. Right? And that you went through this impermanence. So study impermanence or non-self is not to be passive, but to look deeply in life, to experiment, learn, and grow. And be strong. Learn, grow, and be strong. So if you're able to learn, grow, and strong, then you will be the lovable person for this world, for this Mother Earth. You know, you will take making everything you do be care, gentle, and love. And we all have that seed in us. We all have that capabilities to do that. But sometimes we deny to do that. We want to do it, but nobody saw us the way. Nobody motivated us to do that. So you need some motivations. And once you experience some glimpse of non-self, you remove your prejudice. You transform your prejudice, your judgmental. You remove, transform your labeling of races, of skin, of whatever. Because you're able to see the nature of all sentient beings are interconnected. And you never underestimate anyone, even a little children, a little child. I learned to appreciate a little child very much. I know that there will be someone who you don't know. Someone who live in a slum, but one day to be a doctor, you don't know. And one day we will read a slum story in this book. Mm-hmm. You don't know. So that you, when you had that glimpse, you never underestimate anyone. Even the homeless on the street that you see, even the blind person on the street that you see. You learn to appreciate everyone, to respect everyone that you encounter in this life. And you're not going to against anyone or whatever religion that they believe, whatever. Does anyone have any other comments or any sharing about the non-self or any confusions about the non-self? We can talk about non-self endlessly and in different way. To open ourselves in different way, different story. Non-self is a big topic, and it needs some practice, time to practice, and look deeply into it. If you can, you talk non-self in just language, then you will never take get any transformation. You have to understand non-self in your way of life, in your practice. You know, when you take a sip of water, you have to see the non-self, with the connection between you and the water. That is the contemplation. That is the practice. You see, this is your blood. Here, the water. Now it's the water, but once it go into your body, it's become your blood. You have to see that. This is a neat a practice. So when you can see that, you can see there's no separation between you and the water in you. And you learn to appreciate the water you have in your hand. You know, imagine if you don't have blood, enough blood in your body, you can die, right? So you learn, when you have that understand, you learn to appreciate the water, and you learn to use the water mindfully. And if you learn to use the water, drink the water mindfully, you are safe in the earth. You see how connected you are? That's from the moment you have that understand, you already save the earth that way. So the understanding also connection, the interdependent understanding. So I just invite you every day, the practice is you look deeply into everything that you do and how are you connected. The food you eat, the water you drink, the gas that you put in your car, into your car. And once you have that understanding, then you know what to do. And your lifestyle become a lifestyle of a bodhisattva. So don't say the bodhisattva is something somewhere out there. You are the person, the bodhisattva, to do that. Lisa, you want to say something?
Yeah, I just thought I'd share a little story. A little bit. He was here, some of you saw him, he's 6 and a half, and he's taken to saying, you know, mommy, you're touching fire. Right now you're touching fire. And I'll say, oh, really? And he'll say, yes, because you're touching the air, and somewhere the air is touching fire, so you're touching fire right now.
That's a good example.
See? That's a beautiful, this your children can teach you a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why never underestimate children. You know, that's why I really love young people. They are, so this weekend I will have another retreat in Wichita for young people. I just came back 2 weeks ago, about 200 youth. And this weekend I go out again and teach young people. It's very important to not to educate but to share them with understand, beautiful understand, so that they can continue ourselves. That's the non-self. They are continue ourselves in a different way. If we share them the view of life, beautiful view of life, how to live a beautiful life, then you are. Because young people nowadays, they are very confused. And I go to many youth retreats and I feel very empathy. The word love, I have to say, the last one, E, is empathy. You're sharing the feeling, you're sharing the understanding, empathy, empathize with the youth, what they go through. And empathize with your children, that means you love them. You know, the last letter of love. Listen, love is open, listen with openness, and then we can overcome. Overcome is victory, V is victory. Overcome your hatred, your greediness, your attachment. That means victory, you victory all of that. You conquer that. And because you're able to do that because you empathize with them. That means you love them in that way. Empathize here, you understand. You share the understanding with them. And they have many pity stories. I share with them, but not mean I teach them only. I learn from them. I learn from their difficulties, their struggles. And I listen attentively with their strugglings. And only do that, I already help them. So this Friday I will fly out. I'll come back on Tuesday morning, teach the class on I don't want to miss Tuesday class, so that's why they wanted me to stay back a few days. So I say, Tuesday, I don't want to miss too many days of Tuesday class, because I will meet another, I will fly to Canada again, 10 days again. So I will meet this class on Tuesday. So I say that I try to be back for the Tuesday class. And if you come, we will share. So thank you very much for your listening and sitting patiently, listen to a little bit of sharing. So hopefully you can look deeply into the teaching of non-self. So today we talk about non-self and active of letting go is to completely transform the deny, the resistance. That means you are very active of letting go of that. Because I talk this because some of our classmates here post an email to me, shoot me an email and say, can you clarify this non-self and an active letting go? So I want you to understand. That's why I want you to be engaged in this class. I want you to be engaged so that you, if you have some confusion, some thing is I talk but it's not clear, just clarify it. And that's why I mean open discussion. If I don't get it, I will get reference from other teachers. Robert, you want to say something before we end?
I would like to say, in my life, when I was facing difficult problems, impermanence, to contemplate deeply, these things pass, and perhaps that's where you were saying impermanence is non-self. It's a real wonderful antidote for pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is really good for you in our life. You have this glimpse of understanding, because accept it or not, we will, as the sentiment, we will and encounters more or less of a struggle in our life, but we have the tools to work with and it saves us and after the struggle. Okay, so we will end here, and I will invite Teresa the Bell to end the Dharma sharing today. So please relax. Thank you. So we'll take a 5-minute break and we will have a walking meditation outside together, short walking, and then we'll come back to our sitting here. Last week we sit in the mountain, and today I think we'll sit here and